I have Fintan Lawler from Lawler Partners and a resident solicitor. Hello, Fintan. Long time no talk to you for a while.
Good morning, Noel. How are you? You well?
Yeah, that sounded Chinese there. Long time no talk to.
we had a nice break now for the summer, of course.
We did,
back
yeah.
On Monday.
Good month, Davin. You're kept going all year round.
I kept busy, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, the first question we have, I recently found a picture of me was published in a newspaper. Now, I didn't consent to it, and I was attending an event, and I can be seen behind the main individuals being photographed. Now, although I'm not personally named or directly photographed, I'm nonetheless identifiable. How do I go about claiming against this newspaper? Do I have a case? There's no use in asking them to remove the photo as it has already been distributed. Strange one, that.
It's an unusual one, though, but I think from the question, it seems that they were in the background to the main photo.
Indeed, yeah. I mean, you see it on TV all the time with, you know, when the news is on, there's people in the background from the main news.
Yeah. No, I don't think if the story wasn't about them or they weren't identified in the newspaper, albeit that they obviously are recognisable from the photo, I don't really think they have a case. It's obviously bringing in GDPR and privacy rights and what are your rights, but I don't think that there was any damage caused to the individual as a result of them being pictured or photographed in the background. And as you know from previous conversations and listeners' questions, know that you can only recover compensation in circumstances where you've suffered damage. And if somebody hasn't suffered damage, well, then they're not entitled to be compensated. So I don't think that there'd be a case there for that listener, I'm afraid.
Yeah, I'd be scared of a precedent that was set to you. Well, not scared really, but just thinking about the ramifications. If you think about any sort of sport like football, where the camera goes on the crowd and spots people, stuff like that, you know, that would be coming into question, wouldn't it?
I mean, we wouldn't be able to take a photo of any public event in case there's somebody in the background in that circumstance.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, I think we can forget about that anyway. That's the advice. Okay, the second one is, I bought my car off a private seller on Done Deal some weeks ago. I was assured that there was nothing wrong with the car and that it was in brilliant condition. On the surface, it seemed great, and I couldn't believe my luck that I was getting such a good car for such a reasonable price, rather. In the following weeks, the car started to give me a lot of trouble, and after taking it to a mechanic, I soon learned that there are more problems with this car. Do you have a case? Do I have a case against the seller? I think
that's a good question, Noel. And it's a question that keeps coming up that I've heard. Kind of, you hear it every 6 or 8 months that somebody said, I'm after purchasing something on Done Deal, and I'm not happy with it now. But there's a rule called caveat emptor, which converts to buyer beware, can be translated to buyer beware. And basically what it means is that it means if you're buying a second-hand item, you have an obligation and a duty to satisfy yourself as to the condition of the product before you purchase it, because you don't have recourse after the event. So in this circumstance where they bought on Done Deal from a private seller, they should have gone out with a mechanic at the time of purchase of the car and checked the car over, got the mechanic to check the car to make sure that they were happy with the car and it was in good working
condition. Exactly, not go to the mechanic afterwards, yeah.
Yeah. Now, if you're buying it from a garage, it's different because you have a warranty from a garage because you're buying from somebody in the trade, and therefore they've a greater duty of care to the purchaser to make sure that the goods are of merchantable quality and are fit for a purpose. So if you buy a microwave in DID or Power City or some of these electrical shops and it breaks down, you can take it back to them and explain to them, you know, I bought this in the shop, I expected it to work and it doesn't work, and in that circumstance I want a refund or I want my money back. But in the private seller scenario, they really should be heading out with a mechanic to inspect the car before the purchase, because they have no recourse after the event. And that also happens if somebody was to, say, pick up, I don't know, a table and chairs they see on Done Deal, and so that's lovely, and they send the delivery van over and the goods are delivered to their house and they notice that there's a nick or there's damage. It's no good at that stage when the money is paid and the deal is done saying, you know, I've taken possession of these items and now, you know, on inspection, I'm not that happy with them. Because obviously you have to inspect them before you buy them and before you hand over the money. So I'm sorry, I can't help that listener this morning. I don't know.
Okay, it's like, as you said about the adage there, the same applies. I mean, if it's too good to be true, it usually is, so you have to be a little more careful and bring the mechanic afterwards. It's like that after the old staying as well after the horse is bolted.
Yeah.
Okay, and the last one is I work in a shop. I recently discovered that my employer has been watching over the CCTV footage of myself and my colleagues in work. I believed that the CCTV was purely there in case any criminal activity occurred. I feel quite uncomfortable now and distressed by this. I believe that the employer is watching over the CCTV to ensure we're not slacking off in work. Do I have a case?
Okay, well, that listener might have a case there, Noel. Yeah, there might be something in that. This has become very relevant this year in relation to GDPR, which your listeners are probably aware from so much publicity that it's the General Data Protection Regulation. And what that set up to do, it came in the country in 1988 and was amended in 2003. But the new act here in 2018 is to take account of, I suppose, CCTV footage, social media, mobile phone, that whole new electronic era that wouldn't have necessarily been as relevant, say, in 1988. And the CCTV policy really is that if you have a CCTV CCTV camera, that you have to have warning signs up in relation to it. And you have to explain to, if it's in a work environment, you have to explain to your employee what's the purpose of the CCTV footage. Now, very often you'll see that a sign for CCTV camera for security purposes only.
Mm-hmm.
And in that circumstance, if there's a break-in or if somebody is robbing some items from a shop, by way of example, you can go back over the CCTV footage and check, obviously, the identifiable. Can you identify the person who stole? You see this on Crime Call on RTE once a month, and they run the footage of somebody might recognise this individual going into an off-licence, etc., etc. However, if, by way of example, that shop owner is monitoring his employees' activities and calls him in for a disciplinary hearing in relation to the fact that he's been late maybe three mornings out of five, and the employee says, but you weren't here, how do you know I was late? And he says, well, I saw it on the CCTV footage.
Mm-hmm.
He's not allowed to do that.
Really?
CCTV footage is for security purposes.
Oh, I see.
Not for employee monitoring.
Okay.
Now, if the sign said for employee monitoring and security purposes, and then he took the employee to task for being late, in that circumstance, he's okay, because he's notified the employee that he is recording his data and his information and his movements, and he can use them in a disciplinary case if needs be. So once the employee is on notice that it can be used and will be used against him if needs be,
okay,
well, then he's on notice of it. But if he's not on notice of it and hasn't been informed of it, the employer can't then use it and can't arrive along one day and say, I'm after checking the CCTV for the last 3 weeks and I can tell you I've noticed that you've done X, Y and Z and we are not happy about it. The employee is quite entitled to term and say, but I didn't realise my images and my data and that footage was being used to monitor me. You never told me that.
Okay.
A lot of companies will have a CCTV policy and in the employee's handbook or in the contract, it will set out what the CCTV is for, what purpose it's for, and what it can be used for. But it sounds like that listener, he was working in the shop, I think you said, and that he thought it was for criminal activity, and then the employee was watching him, or the employer was watching him.
Mm-hmm.
Which he shouldn't be doing.
Okay. I've seen some programs over the years, I mean, I don't know how viable they were at the time or legally, where an employer has suspected that maybe his workers fiddling at the tails or putting a hidden camera. So you couldn't get away with doing anything like that now, could you?
No, that's definitely a breach of the client's data protection rights. You're recording their personal information and you're using it without their consent.
Okay.
And that's definitely a no-no under the GDPR. Now, really, if he suspected that, what he should be doing is putting a sign up and saying CCTV camera for security and employee monitoring purposes. And at that stage then, he can record your man dipping into tail, mm-hmm. if the case may be, and then use that against him and say, you know, you're caught. But what a lot of people do in that circumstance now is they're a little bit clever about it. They're going in with what's called a secret shopper. And the secret shopper will hand over €50 and head off saying, I don't need a receipt, I'm in a hurry.
Mm-hmm.
And then they record whether the €50 was logged for the purchase or not logged for the purchase at a certain time. And I know that maybe some of the bar owners or restaurant owners will have what's called a bar fly, which is somebody sitting at the bar watching the monitoring of the till and what's been rang up and what's not been rang up. But no, if you put a camera in and you install it and you don't tell somebody that you're recording their information and their personal data, you definitely can't use that in a disciplinary case.
I'm going to ask this question, it may sound very stupid. What's the difference between both of these ways of monitoring an employee, between the camera and actually having someone there watching them?
Yeah, well, I suppose the camera is that you're inadvertently recording their movements without their consent and without their knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
And you're taking that footage and you're using it in a disciplinary hearing. The other way, you're having somebody observe their movements one way or the other, and you're then relying on that. But I take your point. You're saying either way, the data subject mm-hmm. isn't aware that their movements are being recorded, but it's just under the data protection legislation, you're recording footage of them, you're taking their image, you're using their image, and you're using that against them, and it's their personal information.
Okay.
If, by way of example, you had the barfly turn around and said, no, I monitored Joe, and he definitely didn't ring up 2 pints of Heineken and 2 gin and tonics at 8:30, you also might need him in evidence as well. If you're going to the Workplace okay. Relations Commission, you might need somebody to give evidence to that effect.
Okay. Well, thanks very much. I'm going to throw a question at you that has come in recently because I didn't have time to give it to you. And so you can just mull over and let me know what it is. And it's to do with wheels again. And then when I leave the question with you, it's to do with, for instance, the way things are working now with parents taking their children in because of the housing situation. Now, we'll give a sort of an idea, hypothetical. If you've got, say, 3 children in a family, 2 of them already have the house, the 3rd one is renting but runs into difficulty, and they come back and live with the parents, and they end up living there for maybe 2 or 3 years. And if something happens to the parents in those 2 or 3 years, but the parents have made a will with an equal share for each parent. And each child, and yeah. the child that come back to live in the house and married with 2 children, and as I said, he'd been there for 2 years. Now, does that will stand? Like, or because he's living in the house, if I'm not asking for the answer now, just to you can let me know the next time I have you on, because if the other 2 want to sell the house. And that
yeah,
sort of
thing. Very good question, Noel, and we will deal with it the next day.
Great,
and
great.
It is happening quite a lot. You'd be surprised how many times that's come across my desk, that
okay.
type of scenario, where 1 left in the house and the other 2 want to share and want to sell the house.
Yeah.
But
okay.
I think we get into more detail.
Indeed, that'd be great. And just the last thing, Fintan, just how often, to do it wheels again, I keep getting asked and I keep saying, well, I'll ask again. You should do it at least every 5 years, but how often should people update their wills?
I think at a minimum every 5 years. But
that's what you say,
circumstances
yeah.
change in 2 years, Noel, and this can quite often happen, particularly where parents at a certain age and the children are in their 30s. You might have 1 or 2 children getting married within the space of 18 months of each other, and you might have new in-laws, and you might even have a new grandchild. So your circumstances might change quite quickly in a 2 or 3 year period, where your children are, say, 31 to 34, whereas there's unlikely to be the same level of change when your children are 21 to 24
mm-hmm.
for that 3 year period. So it really does depend on your circumstances. It depends on how quick things are changing for you. Clearly, if somebody is separated or divorced, you might want to change your will. And that's how your child is separated mm-hmm. or divorced, you might want to change your will. If you get sick and if it looks like, you know, you might not have as long as you thought, you might want to change your will at that circumstance, in that circumstance. So it very much depends on the individual. But if there's a life-changing event or circumstances changing radically, you should change your will. But generally speaking, you should pull it out every 3 years or every 5 years and just review it. It doesn't mean you have to change it,
mm-hmm.
but you're taking it out to reconsider it. Join. Has the tax changed? Has the tax rate changed? Has the threshold changed? I know we spoke about this before, that at one stage the threshold for a child to inherit from a parent was in excess of €450,000.
Mm-hmm.
And that then has now come down to €310,000. So there's a big difference there. If you made a will at a certain point thinking that you can give your child €450,000 and you won't pay any tax, when the fact that you don't realise that the threshold has changed and it's come down mm-hmm. to €310,000,
okay.
which means that there's €140,000 in the mix now for a tax that you weren't aware of. In addition to that, at the same time the tax rate was 20% and it went to 33%. So you're now paying 13% more tax than you would have been, and you're now paying it on an additional 140,000 euros that you don't think you're paying it on. So all of those things can have an influence in relation to changing the will. So it's just worth reviewing it. Am I still happy with the position? Am I still happy with the beneficiaries? Have my circumstances changed? Have I still got the same level of assets? Have I new assets? Have I old assets? Have I sold a property? Have I opened a new bank account? So because the world's evolving all the time, you just need to review it every 3 to 5 years and make sure you're happy with it.
Okay.
If you're not, obviously you make a new will. And if you're reasonably happy with it, well, then you put it back in the drawer for another 3 or 5 years and you can review it again at that stage.
Okay, and of course your solicitor will advise you along the way as well. Okay, give us the website, Fintan, please, for where you are.
Yeah, the website is www.lawlerpartners.ie.
Okay, thank you very much, Fintan. Look forward to talking to you again. And I'm sure we're going to have more. I'm sure we'll have more questions about wills, no doubt about it. Thanks very much, Fintan.
Thanks indeed, Noel. Take care.
See you. Bye. And that's Fintan Lawler from Lawler Partners. And then you hear the website there. And he'll be here in about 2 weeks' time again and answering that query about the will. And if there's any more you have, do give us a call, text, or an email. I'll give you all the details after this bit of music.